check. How do I speak? How do I speak my... Do you always forget how to speak when you do your podcast?
Oh, yeah, of course. I forget how to converse with other humans.
All right. Start putting on like a British accent or something.
I just get catatonic. Stop speaking.
All right. I think...
Sounds good.
Drew.
Yes. Hello.
You're...
Gay?
You're gay. All right. I think we're good.
Cool.
I think we're good. Awesome. Is there anything else you need from me?
No,
just
I'm
context.
Ready.
Throw some context at me.
Yeah, nice.
I'll give you my thoughts. Yeah.
All right, cool.
I'm very keen.
You're listening to Dead Ramones. That's the name of the podcast. And I'm here with Drew Bensley.
Hell yeah, baby.
Sorry, Andrew Bensley, Esquire.
Esquire, thank you. Andrew James Bensley,
Andrew
Esquire.
James,
thank
Mr.
you very much.
Andrew James, Dr. Andrew James Bensley, Esquire.
That's what I tell people.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I said before we started recording, but I'm going to repeat myself.
Okay.
Second member of the Community Notice Board podcast.
That is true.
To be a guest.
And I said it's the greatest suburb-based research podcast.
It is.
In the world.
Is it? How many of those are there, really?
It's just us.
Do you have any competition?
We're fighting off
any
all competition. I'm sure there's another one out there, but we're the best.
I'd agree with that. I've done it. It was fun. Get to tell stories.
It was fun, yeah. But, you know, for anyone who's listening who is not aware, we get guests on, like the lovely Ryan Sim, to talk about where they grew up. And we three nerds do as much research as we can.
I feel like you're really carrying the research section of that podcast.
I love the research. We've all nestled into our niches.
Yeah, Alex White bullies you.
Yes.
I don't know what Jamie does.
Jamie's just like...
Fathers his child.
Fathers his child, falls asleep on mic.
Does he really?
Because he...
He's so sleep deprived.
He's so sleep deprived. And he also gets up to piss like three or four times an episode.
Oh, right.
So he needs his
chaotic
prostate checked or something because he cannot hold a piss for an hour.
Chaotic energy.
That's right.
So Alex White came on, and I do owe you an apology because you and Jamie, you're both the subculture gurus from that trio.
I got on
Hank Hill-ass.
Exactly.
Alex White.
It's not even that we're like the subculture. It's more that like we like music that came out before... Well, that's not Crowded House. Like, Alex loves Crowded House.
Dude, he was talking up how he's into hip-hop a lot on the podcast. Did not mention Crowded House once.
That's so funny. And by hip-hop, I bet he means like, a hip. Like, full 80s.
That one
like,
Sugar Hill Gang.
Other stuff would be like, that would get his rankles up too much.
Yeah.
Oh, what are they saying?
I only like the N-word when white people say
Thank you.
Just irony poisoned Alex White. We're all that generation though, aren't we? Like just listening to Come Town, just being like, yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
Things that are the least funny things in the world are like, that's hilarious to me.
And you don't even laugh. You just say, that's funny.
That's funny.
That's good.
That's really the best reaction
you can give is that's really funny.
That's so good.
I've not cracked a smile in three weeks, but that is funny.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. You're a funny guy. I'd say you're one of the funniest people I know.
On the podcast?
On the podcast. Out of the three of you, you're the best. Dude, we're just taking shots. Let's make this the whole hour.
No, I love the pod and I love the boys.
Yeah. But you used to be a stand-up comedian.
I used to dabble.
You're so funny that you had to quit.
Yeah, I got chased out.
Yeah, you got chased out.
some ASIO officers took me aside.
He's raising the bar too much.
No, I had to quit because we just kept getting locked down. And then I was like...
What's the point?
And then you know what happened is I started watching, like, me and my partner would... In the previous years when I was doing stand-up, I'd come home from work, I'd have some dinner, and I'd go to a gig.
Yeah.
And then we got locked down, and I would come home from work, have some dinner, and then just watch delightful television shows on streaming services.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was so much better than going out to a gig.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't have to turn
your brain on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then, I don't know, every time I see you, I'm like, dude, I'm coming back.
We're on a 3-week cycle, I think. Like, you get your period or something, and you're like, oh, I gotta get back on stage. Like,
well,
get your period. You have 3 beers.
Yeah,
message me. You have exactly 3 beers, and then you send me.
And then I'm like, brother, Rat Club Monday night, and then I get to Monday, and I'm like,
yeah. Follow Rat Club Comedy on social media.
Absolutely,
every Monday.
But you know, I will be back one day. when I get the...
No, you won't.
I know. Maybe when I'm like 65 or something.
Can you give me any tips for having a sick... That noise in the background is my dog being a psycho, everybody.
He's crazy, this guy.
He gets a little bit worked up when we have guests over. He's a show-off.
He's showing off, yeah.
Can you give me any tips on making your podcast successful?
I mean, if anyone can give us tips, I'm willing to take them as well. Right. I wouldn't say we're successful.
But you've got a Patreon.
We do, but it's not like it's going fucking... It's not paying the bills. Occasionally.
Australians hate podcasts. Australians hate comedy in general, I think.
Yeah, it's pretty depressing when you see the Australian podcast charts and it's like Bobby Lee and...
Yeah, everyone just doesn't see these LA comics.
Yeah, it's like, and that's number one, or Joe Rogan or whatever. And it's like, there's better ones out there. Listen to fucking this. Listen to Community Notice Board.
Listen to Community Notice Board, guys.
Listen to Ben and Conchetta's.
Are they still doing that one?
Like very infrequently, but it's like one of my faves.
Yeah. Yeah, they're funny people. All right, cool. Do you wanna get stuck into this record?
Oh, man,
do you wanna tell me what you think?
Fucking love to.
Maybe I don't know how to start. Maybe you give me your give me a short couple sentence review.
Okay.
What you thought of we're at 99. The year is 1991.
Great year.
The album is Mush.
I was 4 years old.
You're 4 years old. I was six. Yeah. Oh, I was turning six. January 1991, my parents took me. I was age 5. My sister, who was age 2, went to America.
Oh.
We saw the La Brea Tar Pits because I was really into dinosaurs and
Very
stuff.
Cool. So was I.
This was 1991.
Did you used to get the magazine where you'd get like a little part and you'd build the dinosaur every month?
Wasn't it just called Dinosaur Magazine?
I think so, yeah.
I had all of them.
I had them
in a binder.
Nice.
And the 3D? You had the 3D?
Yeah.
Centerfold. It was a 3D centerfold.
Fold out. Oh, damn. Look at the arms on that T-Rex. Look how little those arms are.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow, how'd they get her? 1991, you know, the Muppet Show. I said this
Incredible.
Before, like Muppet Show defined my form.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah. My parents would tape it on VHS and just like, I'll just watch the tapes.
Was it Waldorf and what's the other grumpy guy's
Statler
name?
And Waldorf.
Yeah.
Waldorf.
Was that your like sense of humor?
No, I'd say sorry, I'm just repeating bits now.
Okay.
I was going to be like, yeah, Fozzie Bear, big influence. Yep. I always wanted to be, yeah, no, boring.
Who's the drummer?
Drummer, Animal.
Animal.
Animal,
That's,
yeah.
Yeah, he's fucking rules.
Yeah. Animal does rule. Rock and roll. Animal could have been a hardcore band.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But also what happened in 1991, the album Mush by the UK band Leatherface was released.
I'm glad that you specified because I didn't know if it was Mush or Mush.
It's Mush. Because I believe, the cover of the album is mushrooms.
Ah, okay.
And to fund their tours,
yep,
they would sell mushrooms.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's
they,
cool.
they were psychedelic
That's
mushroom
cool.
dealers in the north of England.
Wow,
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. So what did you think of this record?
I put it on a few days ago. So I've listened to it a few times through. And I will just, straight off the bat, spoiler alert, loved it.
You did love it. Yeah, nice.
Furious I hadn't heard it before. Like one of those things where I was like, this fucking rules.
Yeah.
But I put it on and probably like 10 seconds into track one, my initial thought was like, this is some fucking like Motorhead shit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the guitar work, like it's one of the like kind of punk records where there's like the guitar work is, you can listen to it and be like, oh, that's fucking good. Like mm-hmm. that's really good. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I was like, some Motorhead meets the Replacements early stuff, like Sorry Ma.
All right.
That was my...
Did you read this on the internet?
I did not.
Because that's basically what everyone says.
Is that for real?
Yeah.
I purposely did no research.
Yeah, right.
Which is the opposite to how I normally approach podcasts.
Yeah.
But that was
down today.
That was my... But I also recall that you told me that Hot Water Music wouldn't exist without this.
Yeah, a lot of those bands. Yeah,
because I hadn't listened to Hot Water Music. I used to fucking love that band, and I hadn't listened to them in years, so I put that on as well.
You really fit the profile of a guy who has the Hot Water Music logo as a tattoo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's surprising that you don't. like your Hot Water Music tattoo passing.
Yeah,
like, you know what
okay,
I mean?
nice.
Yeah.
I do want to get the Deftones White Pony tattoo.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
That would be great.
That would be pretty
but
cool.
But I know not Hot Water Music. Yeah. But
you know that meme that's like, do not kill... the part of you that is cringe, kill the part of you that cringes.
Yes.
That's where I'm at with Deftones. I'm like, no, that record's just great. I can't.
I mean, they're one of my favorite bands of all time.
I can't deny it.
all their albums are fucking rule.
Yeah. And they are pretty cringe, but.
I don't care.
That doesn't doesn't change shit.
And that's the best part about being in your mid to late 30s is you don't have to care about cringy shit. You can lean into dorky dad.
Yeah, exactly. You're mid to late 30.
Yeah. Emphasis on mid, baby.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah, this was their third album.
Okay.
And basically the overwhelming, like pretty much every review is like perfect record, 10 out of 10.
Yep.
No notes.
Would agree.
Perfect record. So it's interesting, like as someone who's like you're more of like an emo kid, I guess. Like the bands you like.
Yeah, I mean
correct me if I'm wrong. I don't want to tell you what you like. But you know, you've shown me like sort of emo bands that I
need to watch
and stuff like that, like Midwest kind of.
Yeah, like I do. I'm all over the shop. Like I love it depends, like at different ages I was into different stuff. So I've had like, but I never let it go. You know what I mean? So I was like, when I was 15, I loved Deftones. But then I moved on to other stuff.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that I don't love Deftones anymore. Just because I became a Bright Eyes nerd when I was 17.
Doesn't mean
I can still not listen to Tool every now and then.
Yeah, exactly.
I love some Midwest emo stuff. I was going to ask if you're coming to Hot Mulligan at the Factory in March, because I got my tickets, baby. So
maybe. I don't know. They've definitely grown on me.
I
like
love
the singer a lot.
Yeah. Great, like funny lyrics.
Funny lyrics. Yeah. Yeah, maybe. That could be fun. So you're actually going to a show?
Mm-hmm.
Because I tried with all my time to get you to see Tiger's Jaw. And you're like, yeah, maybe. Yeah, and then day of, I'm like, you coming? You're like, yeah, maybe. And then an hour before, I'm like, so what's happening? You're like, nah.
I just couldn't get into the new
yeah,
singer.
Yeah, you like Adam.
Yeah,
you like
I'm Wicca an Adam
Phase.
Boy.
Did you get into Wicca Phase Springs Eternal after listening to Tiger's Jaw?
His solo
lo-fi hip-hop project.
You told me about it. I listened to it once and didn't care for it. No.
But you were never into like hardcore music?
No. That was like... when I was growing up, I grew up in Queanbeyan, which is just outside of Canberra. And Canberra... You know, when I was 18, I would go to like a lot of shows because Canberra, for all its flaws, does have an awesome hardcore scene.
Dead
Some
Kings,
sick
baby.
Bands that came out of it. Dead Kings, Dead I Exist, Kings. Four Dead.
Yeah. Shout out.
And so I would go to shows because like I had some friends in bands and just like, it was just never my like foremost music.
Slow Burn?
Slow Burn, yeah.
Slow Burn, yeah.
I would have been listening to like Coheed and Cambria at the time.
Hard luck.
Yep, absolutely. Nice. I mean, it's crazy. Like, there are a lot of like sick hardcore bands that come out of this tiny little town.
Did you ever get into Life and Limb?
No, I have no idea who that is.
That was sick. That was so good.
But like I said, it was like the full like hardcore was never my bag.
Sure,
but it's not like I didn't like it.
But you went to the show, so you were exposed.
I would go to because literally I'd have friends in the band and be like, come see my band. And I'm okay, cool, And they're fun. Like house party shows are always fun.
Yeah. Those house shows in Canberra were so sick to play. That was so much fun.
Yeah. Crazy. Just the fucking vibe, the atmosphere there is sick.
The last time I toured to Canberra was in a band. My final band I ever did was called Low Season. And we weren't a hardcore band. We were like sort of post-punk, post-rock sort of. Yeah, just like a more like, I guess you'd say grown up music.
Okay.
But we played this house show with Oxen. Did you ever get into Oxen? They were a really good band. And I think there was like a screamo band that played as well. But then we slept in the house. It was the Lackluster house. I don't know if you ever know the one. And we were sleeping on the floor in the living room. And then we just heard these two people fucking in the bed. Like,
jeez.
Like literally we were here, there was a door, and then they were fucking. Oh, we're just like lying there on the floor, just being like, cool. All right. This is our life now. It was just like, we were all kind of like on the verge of 30. I think one of the dudes might've been older in his 30s and we're just like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
That's we're sleeping on the floor.
And it's not like the image of like, we're fucking rock stars. No. It's like, you're the one fucking, not the one listening to someone next door. Like that shouldn't that be us?
It was like, I think it was a bit of a wake up call. Cause it was like, oh, this is early 20s shit.
Yeah.
We should be in a motel right now.
Totally.
Yeah.
And nice motel too.
Like nice motel.
Separate rooms.
Yeah. And we just like, the fact is like, we couldn't afford it. And I think for me, I was like, well, what am I doing?
Mm.
I don't know. So basically, Sorry, I got so sidetracked with that story. Like my eyes like rolled.
I know.
Like,
back in that living room for a minute. You've gone somewhere.
Jesus Christ, God! I don't really miss playing in bands. I guess like I miss playing music, but I don't miss playing in bands. Is that a
well? I get it because
clear distinction. Like
you, is it the it's not admin, but it's like the work of having to actually physically do stuff.
Yeah, load in. I mean, yeah, just the physical aspect of it, like physically being in the van, physically loading in your gear, physically sleeping on the fucking floor.
If you could snap your fingers and you're just there, and then you get to play, and then you go, and then you're gone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I get it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So basically, where I was going with that, like with like the hardcore subculture subgenre sort of stuff, is like obviously the point of this podcast is like each week. You know, I cover a year chronologically and I cover what I call like an emblematic or an iconic album.
Yep.
And I think this one is a little bit like left of field because last week would have been a band called Inside Out, which is Zach De La Rocha's first band and gave way to all these like sort of 90s hardcore bands.
Yep.
I don't think Leatherface Mush is emblematic of 90s hardcore the way most people who know about it would think of it.
Yep.
Because... I would definitely count this as a hardcore record, but it obviously had more effect in that sort of Jacksonville punk rock, emo rock scene.
Yep.
Like basically what this band gave way to was like, as you said, Hot Water Music, the band Avail, if you know Avail, band Dillinger 4.
I know them.
Yeah, just melodic punk and the Gaslight Anthem as
love
well.
Love the Gaslight
Anthem. Yeah. And then, you know, all the bands around that, like Make Do Amend, all this sort of, all this sort of stuff. Which is not, they're not the bands you think of when you think of like hardcore, like the hardcore scene. But I think this record, when it came out in 91, it was like what you said, it was like The Replacements meets Bad Religion meets fucking Motorhead.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was just like, like their first two records, they were a fucking hardcore band, but then this one came out and it kind of was just like, oh, this is something new.
Yeah.
Like this, we haven't heard this before.
I was going to say the sound of it doesn't quite mesh with me. Like when I went back to listen to it for like the second or third time and spotted that it was 1991, I was like, it sounds later.
It's timeless.
And it's not even like, not even that much later. Like 91, it seems too early for this, but I'd be like, if you told me it came out in 1998, I'd be like, yeah that's in some 98 shit. Even
though it's only like it 7 years like that, away. Yeah. But I would also say the thing, like we did Bad Religion's album Suffer a few weeks ago as well with Meg Yeager. And I'd say the same thing about Suffer.
Mm-hmm.
It came 88 and it does feel like when I was sort of like the bands I was listening to like early high school. Like
it
feels like it was a decade ahead of
time. Yeah, yeah.
And I think it's true of this one as well. So I got a few quotes here just to like give people context and like if you have any thoughts on this, like let me know. But this is from a little I think this is because the Hammond. So the guitarist name was Dickie Hammond, and I always say Dickie Barrett, which is the singer of the Mighty Mighty Boston. So Dickie Hammond. This is
great name, by the way, Dickie Hammond.
Yeah. This is from like almost like a eulogy that The Guardian posted when Dickie Hammond passed away few years ago. But this is just about Leatherface in general. No punk rock group ever mastered melancholia like they did. And scant few, so British, have carried the raw pain their songs did without buckling. And that's from James McMahon.
Yep.
And that makes sense to me, like just being in... Because I got introduced to them through the guitarist in one of my earlier bands, who was a Scottish guy.
Okay.
And basically him and all his... And he was a little bit older than me. And all the guys he knew sort of like in Melbourne, like the Poison City Records scene and stuff like that. Leatherface were like the band.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I chose this record. Because they just had such an overarching influence. And everything, like all roads kind of lead back to Leatherface. And that quote stood out to me because like... That band that I was in, that like you know, my friend showed me this, like we did fall apart because of like just the emotional personalities in the band. Just like the unmedicated.
You guys buckled.
Bipolar. Yeah, we buckled.
Where they didn't.
Under the raw pain of our songs. No, but it's true because like they kept going and they kept just like making records and records. And I don't think any of them shape like... It's kind of like they opened with their closer. Do you know what I mean? Like every album after Mush kind of got compared to Mush.
Yep,
and there's just something about this. It was just like this lightning in a bottle moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there is something so so Northern England about the sound. He's like,
yeah,
obviously the accent, but it's not like he's got like it's not like he's singing like the Arctic Monkeys or something.
No,
he can hear it through, but he's got that like husky sort of voice.
Yeah, yeah.
But there is something like through his voice and his lyrics, you can see like a rainy, grey, post-industrial northern city. Like,
dude, yeah, yeah. That what's the song in industrial atmosphere?
Yeah, it's like the fourth last one.
That song is so incredible.
It's very good.
That song is amazing. And I think that song is a perfect example of what they did as well. Because like you got those breaks where it's just like there's just so much fucking going on.
Yeah.
And it's like so melodic, and the chords and the interplay between the two guitarists, like Frankie Stubbs, who was the singer and guitarist, and then Dickie Hammond. And like they just had this different style of playing.
Mm.
And then like combining that with like this really emotional kind of chorus. But then you just get into that hard, fast, hardcore.
Yeah.
It shouldn't make sense, but that song just brings it together.
Exactly.
And it's so amazing.
It's one of the like the whole is greater than the sum of its parts type thing.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of like whatever conflicts were going on within the band, like that quote kind of like alludes to.
So were there conflicts in the band?
I think they were just like, they're just Northern England.
Yeah.
Like big drinkers.
Yeah.
Big personalities. I imagine that it was, and like, you know, Dickie Hammond left, then he came back, and like all this sort of shit. I think most, what I've learned from like researching this podcast is most hardcore bands just have, I think, like a pretty volatile
That makes sense. Yeah.
And I think when you look at like the culture of like Northern England, especially coming out of the 80s and stuff like that, I can see that being even more so compounded.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. But yeah, about just like the musical side of it. Sorry, I did this research like 2 weeks ago because I was gonna, I was going to record it earlier. Now I'm totally fucking unprepared.
That's all good.
I read a quote basically like both of them said that each other were the best guitarists they knew.
Okay,
which is very funny because like
quite cute.
And then it came together and it's kind of like this interplay, these two different styles, and they just kind of made it work and made something, or maybe they didn't make it work, and that's what made it so unique.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you say it feels English. I agree. It feels English, but like their influences were all American, and that's kind of what set them apart in England.
Yeah.
So they like I said, it was Bad Religion. It was Husker Du. I mean, obviously Motorhead are British. But also a hardcore band called Dag Nasty that were a big kind of melodic 80s band that came out of America. These were all part of like what built the sound that sort of, at least for Mush specifically, kind of came through. So I think it's sort of like, oh yeah, this is such an amazing, unique album. But it does have lineage, though. I don't want to present it as like being this like magical kind of
like it came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it came out of nowhere. But I think for England, like you think of English punk, English hardcore, you think of like the Exploited, you think of like the Liberty Spikes and the or you think of skinheads like Oi Punk and Cox Bar and stuff like that. And these guys were just four dudes in t-shirts or flannel.
Yeah.
Flannel plaid shirts. And they're just
Like I said, it feels English, but it's, to me, that was like thematically, there's something English about it. But the sound itself, you're right. Like that could be, that it's very American punk in that sound. Like,
yeah.
And, but again, when I heard it, I was listening to it through, like with, sort of with the benefit of hindsight, because I was hearing all the bands that they clearly influenced. So I was like, this is, there's something Hot Water Music here about it. There's some fucking, Gaslight Anthem, definitely.
Yeah.
Like that, just that gravelly voice. It's almost like, it's punk, but it's like that influence of, like there's something more. It's not just like,
you can see how emo came from that as well,
100%.
Which is funny when you think of like these dudes, like super masculine dudes from Northern England, like talking about the British royal family and stuff like that. What does it say about English culture that like my favorite artworks from, like my favorite shows, favorite music from England is just the ones that are like, yeah, England sucks.
Well, I mean, they do it so
England
well.
Fucking sucks.
I fucking love like, This Is England, that movie.
Yeah, I haven't seen that one.
Dude, you got to see it. It's so good.
Yeah.
But this, it's set in where I imagine this band comes from. Like that nothing gray northern
desolate
town, you know, like no hope sort of town. A note that I'm like mentally made when I was listening to this, which I've never heard a band do this before, loved that they did it, which was close on just an incongruous cover.
Yeah.
Like it's, so it's Message in a Bottle, I think, by the Police.
Yeah.
And it kind of,
and it's such a good cover.
It's a great cover, but it's so, I guess because it's such a, I don't know, like it's a goofy kind of 80s song.
Yeah.
The incongruity with the band, like it's, it just sort of throws you a little bit because like, what?
On one of their early albums, they do Candle in the Wind.
Oh, really?
I haven't heard it. I haven't listened to it yet. Cool. But they, I can't remember if they close with it, but yeah, they do Elton John. It's crazy.
I just remember being like, I've literally never heard an album close on a cover.
Yeah.
And
it's
do
a
it so
weird,
well.
It's a weird statement to make as well. It's odd. It's like, I don't know if it's like throwing down the gauntlet or whatever and being like, because it's a really nice cover and it's a really good song as well. And they don't make it ugly.
No, it's a straight up and down cover.
Yeah, it's really nice. So I don't know. I don't think it's like a fuck you to the Police or anything like that. But it is like this weird cultural statement. And I don't know exactly how to define it.
Yeah.
But it definitely like hits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It fucking works. I loved it.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. talking about the dynamic though as well, like just to, I guess like to drive it home. This is from a online blog called Negative Insight. And this is sort of like talking about their lead up to releasing this album, mm-hmm. because like before this, they were kind of just known as like a ratty sort of thrash punk band. The gruff personas of the individual members created a beautifully perfect contrast with the heartfelt and soulful tunes the group would pound out night after night.
Okay.
So it's talking, they were known as a live band more than like their records were kind of respected. Like people wanted to see them live, but they were also like out of place in the scene from what I can tell. Like they just really stood out on their lineups. They were the only ones doing this like American style of like punk rock hardcore. The two main personalities in Leatherface were definitely Frankie Stubbs and Dickie Hammer. Like the rhythm section would change every couple of albums. And they always had really amazing players. Like the drumming on this record is so tight. It's so insane. Like it just like keeps everything like, like, especially when you have, like, the guitars are almost, like, chaotic. Like, they're so noisy. Like, the guys can fucking play, but the actual sound of the guitars is like, Jesus. Like, it feels like it's about to fall apart if it weren't for the drummer fucking.
Exactly. Like, it's like on a train. It's like the old train, like a mine. You know, with the thing, like the carriage that would carry, like, the mine shit on?
I play
on?
Donkey Kong. It's like a Donkey Kong.
And I guess the drums are like the bananas. And Frankie Hammond's the gorilla.
Frankie Stubbs.
Dickie Hammond. Frankie Hammond. That's what I mean. Like it feels like it's coming off the carriage at all times, but they hold it together.
They just
somehow
hold it together,
And Donkey Kong is a fantastic game.
And Donkey Kong's such a good game, man.
It fucking rules.
So Stubbs became the singer because he was the only one to bother writing lyrics.
Okay.
Which is interesting, like we had this with the band Gorilla Biscuits as well. The singer of Gorilla Biscuits didn't want to be the singer.
Mm.
He had stage fright. It's so, so interesting that like these iconic bands, these iconic fucking singers and frontmen are just like, oh, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of like the thing, like that's that old quote, like anyone who wants to be present shouldn't be president.
Totally.
And that's why they're so good, because they're like reluctant kind of showmen almost.
They don't
like
want to be the star sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of hardcore bands where you have like these very braggadocious front men and they're good. And you can say the same thing about like rap and hip hop as well.
Yeah.
But I don't know. The stuff that really like gets its claws in are these guys who are, I guess, like introverted, and they're like, I just got to get this out.
Yeah.
And that's something that comes up again and again on this podcast, where it's like, it doesn't really feel like a choice. Like there is no bragging. There is no boastfulness. It's just like, I got some feelings, man, and if I don't, here I'm going to explode if I don't do this fucking band.
I mean, yeah, I guess that's a little bit like Westerberg from Replacements had that about him. Like, he wasn't, he kind of was, but he wasn't at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, but then he's one of the greatest lyricists of all time.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess there's a lot of like great artists who are a bit like that. Like even Bob Dylan for a while, he would like, I think he was maybe more scared of getting assassinated, but he would stand behind the amp stacks.
Ah.
He wouldn't stand out in front of stage.
Well, I mean, going back to Deftones, Chino Moreno famously used to just face the band with his back to the audience because he had stage fright.
Yeah.
And I think when they were going to get signed, like the record label were like confused when they watched them live. And they're like, man, we love your sound, but can you turn around? Because he would just face the other band members.
That's the weird thing about comedy as well, because you've got to be... That's the thing I always find incongruous about doing comedy, because like... I don't love being the center of attention, but I love like making shit.
Yeah,
and especially like, you know, you love getting laughs on stage and stuff like that. But to do that, you got to be like the man.
Yeah.
Like, you got to be out there and like...
I mean, it's the worst part of comedy is having to...
Pretend like you're a confident person when all your jokes are about being a piece of shit as well. Like, it's just like... It's interesting. Maybe that's about part of the attraction, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So I told you, their first van they bought... The first band from Selling Magic Mushrooms. Oh, yeah. Here's the quote. Here's the quote about the guitars. So both Frankie Stubbs and Dick Hammond said they could never play what the other man played. So they worked out their own wildly different parts that just sounded good. Like, just this shrugging shoulders of like,
yeah,
this sounds good together. Yeah. Like, you know. And yeah, both men said the other was the best player they knew.
Sick.
Like, which I think is so beautiful.
It's cute. It's adorable.
Yeah, it's kind of cute.
Especially, I like to think of that happening... Because, you know, you mentioned that they're all gruff and they're these Northern English, like, hard men or whatever.
Coming out working...
I just like to think that they said that, but they didn't want to say it. Like, they were just like, oh, he's probably best
he's
over
pretty
you.
Pretty good, eh?
What was that?
Yeah, he's pretty good, eh?
he's all right.
Oh, yeah, he's all right. Eh? I hate the bloody queen. I like Dickie, but I hate the fucking queen.
She auditioned for the band at one point. Like, Maggie, no. Wait.
Maggie?
I was thinking of... I got the Queen mixed up with Margaret Thatcher.
Margaret Thatcher.
Lizzie is what Lizzie. I should have said.
Lizzie. One of the songs that really stands out, the reason I keep thinking of that, the thing that really drives home, not like just the... Fuck, what's the name of that industrial atmosphere song? Fucking... Dead industrial atmosphere. The other song that really stands out as like being quintessentially Northern England is the song Baked Potato.
Yeah.
He's talking about the immigrants. He's talking about the royal family. And it's like, yeah, but I know how to cook a baked potato. It's just like pretty scathing without being like a dickhead about it, I guess.
Okay.
Like, it's just like, again, it's just this like shrugging of the shoulders where it's like, oh, this is the cards we're dealt. I guess. Sucks. Like,
it's like, it's a little bit George Orwell, because he had like scathing indictments of English society while also loving English, like Englishness.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they're obviously very proud of like their town, but they're also this recognition that it's kind of dying.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, maybe not proud of their town, but proud of their working class roots, which is such an English thing as well.
Totally,
like,
totally.
Like, yeah, yeah. It's very complex, I guess.
And
the thing I was going to say before is like the idea of them being gruff, these gruff personalities, blah, blah, blah. I think that's almost like, sometimes to me that sounds like kind of classist.
Mm-hmm.
To be like, oh, you're working class, so you're like rough around the edges.
Yeah, yeah, blah, 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 you're like romanticizing them.
You're romanticizing this kind of like lifestyle where it's just like, this is just, what?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
I'm just being me, dude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah,
you're so gruff.
Yeah, like, oh, what? You're so gruff.
Can you be surly for me?
So this is, I found an interview about the actual making of the record from the guy who put it out. So his name was Lawrence Bell, and he started Roughneck Records, which is what Mush was released on.
Mm-hmm.
But he went on to form Domino Records.
Okay, I don't know Domino.
Which is, they're like a pretty big indie label.
I thought you were going to say Domino's Pizza.
Domino's Pizza.
Larry Bell founded
Larry Bell.
Domino's Larry Pizza. Bell.
You know the pizza tracker?
So this is an independent record. Like, it's not... Was a major label.
No, this was, this is absolutely not a major label. I don't think they ever got, they kind of fell through the cracks a little bit in terms of like the mainstream.
Right.
Like compared to a lot of other bands in the 90s, like especially like, you know, think of Bad Religion, think of like, like all these bands and then like the scene they created that is like kind of a big commercial industry now in terms of like music festivals and stuff like that. Yeah, Leatherface really just kind of like, they flew under the radar. But I also don't think they'd be as much... Like, the mythology is kind of part and parcel with that. They're like, oh, the best band that you've never fucking... Like, your favorite band's favorite band, all that sort of thing.
I always think of stuff like that of... sorry to just always bring it back to The Replacements, but they have that kind of vibe because they were such fuck-ups that they never quite got where they should have gone.
And it's always retrospect is 2020 as well. Now it's like, oh, it's, The Replacements, like, could you have said that 20 years
ago?
Yeah.
Like, but it's so like, you know, if you met, say, if he wasn't dead or whatever, but one of the singers from the band or you know, one of the founding members, you'd just be like, yeah, but dude, like, think of the legacy. And he's like, I would rather have the money.
I'd rather have some money.
I want a retirement plan, please. There's a video on YouTube of somebody that it's Steven Westerberg in this like parking lot in Minnesota.
Paul Westerberg. You're all over the place with the name.
I know. I'm horrific with names because I get it stuck in my head a particular way. And then I just always say, there's, oh God, I was confusing a name the other day. It was Freddie McManus and Billy, and I was hanging out with both of them, Billy Darcy, and just kept calling Freddie Billy. And he was like, dude, my name's like, we've been friends for years. But it's just because they both ended in Y, and because I was just stuck in my head.
Freddie does not end in Y, though.
Yeah, but a Y sound, you know.
Phonetically.
Yeah, phonetically. Anyway, Paul Westerberg. So there's a video on YouTube of Paul Westerberg in some random Minnesota, like, car park, may as well be like a Walmart or something.
Yeah.
And someone's just like filming on his phone and they're like, hey, you Paul Westerberg? And he's like, yeah. And like, cool. And he's just like, yeah, just doing my shopping. And it's just, it's one of those things where it's kind of fun because Paul Westerberg's very funny and he's got a like great, you can tell he's like kind of.
Well, the lyrics are funny.
The lyrics are hilarious and you can tell he's got this dry sense of humor. And so he's playing along with it. But it's a little bit like, they're just like, oh man, you're like one of the greatest. And he's just like, yep, just in a car park in a Walmart. Like, this is my life. Like, never quite made it, but here we are. Thanks, you know, thanks for listening. Could have used your money 20 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm sorry if the coffee's cold, but...
That's all good.
Hey, still get you caffeinated.
Oh, it's good shit.
Yeah, it's interesting, like, stuff like that. Like, these guys... Like, we played with Leatherface at Poison City Weekender. Yeah.
Cool.
So, this was before Dickie Hammond passed away.
So they were together.
That thing they were just playing the Art House.
Okay,
they were just playing like a 200 person cap venue.
Did they? So they were together literally till the death of Dickie Hammond.
This must have been, fuck. What time? What year did their fucking last album come out? An album called the Stormy Petrol. It must have been like 2012 or 2013, and they were. Fucking hell. It would have been around that time. 2013, 2014, something like that. And they were touring this last record they released. I don't know if they were together right up until when he passed away, but he like rejoined the band. They record this record, their last record, and then he passed away a few years later.
Damn.
Yeah, I think it was 2016 or 2017 he passed away.
I mean, that's like...
Probably should have taken notes on that specifically to...
Over 20 years since Mush, and they were like still just fucking
still
grinding.
Yeah, they were still recording.
Playing 200
seaters. They released a bunch of records without Dickie Hammond. Like, he went and did other bands, and Frankie Stubbs kept doing Leatherface. But it kind of like the unspoken kind of. It's like, it's not really Leatherface if it's not the two of them.
Yeah.
And I think Mush kind of proved that, or it's Mush's fault that everyone thinks that.
Yeah.
It's because that interplay between the guitars, I think. His, like his voice is obviously a defining factor, but I don't think, it's not like Morrissey and the Smiths.
Yep.
It's like Morrissey, you know, had a career after the Smiths because it's just Morrissey.
Yeah.
And he kind of like overshadowed.
Sure.
Like the Smiths are amazing musicians, but like people like the Smiths for the lyrics and the voice. And that's why those people continue to follow Morrissey in his
solo career. It's Blink without Tom. It's just not the same.
It's not the same. It's not the same. You need the all the parts. Like you said, it's the sum of the parts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, some of those two parts specifically. What you said before about like, would have liked the money. And again, this is something I've brought up before, but there's this Todd Barry joke about Fugazi.
Okay.
I don't know if you've heard it, but like
definitely
he like talks about Fugazi and it's like, oh, they were this indie rock band and they only played all ages show and they would never charge more than $5 for a show. And can you just imagine like being the drummer being like, maybe we could charge $6? Yeah. I gotta pay rent. Like maybe just charge $6. It's like these mythologies kind of like work against your own self-interest.
Totally.
But yeah. So in terms of like the making of Marsh, it's just this matter of fact kind of like very like working class approach to things. And this is Lawrence Bell from Roughnet Records. It's like, I just booked the studio for them, got them a decent budget to record with. There was a studio called The Greenhouse in London, which was a really good, sort of a properly good, down in Islington way. So it probably cost a few £100 a day. It was definitely the smartest place I knew of and had access to. And it's just like, he just booked them in and they went and made it. And then he says, Frankie and Dickie had written these incredible songs between them together. Then you started hearing the lyrics and they were incredible too. This kind of punk rock, barroom, existential philosophy. It's kind of Bukowski-ish.
It is
a little
Bukowski.
Moving and soul stirring. This is the guy who put it out. And it was, just an extraordinary statement in it. And it still is now. And he also said, the guy who got them the recording studio and put that record, obviously the best punk rock music right now in the UK by far.
Nice. And what like a fuck this, you to everybody else.
Yeah, pretty brutal.
Especially if you recorded like another band the week afterwards and they're like,
Larry,
hey man.
What are you doing, Larry? But just his like belief in it. And I think that to me, that's a very hardcore point of view as well, where like it's just this inspirational kind of like, you did something to me. Mm. You didn't even touch me and you've like done something. Yeah. And I want to give you this money to record this fucking album. And in the same interview, he kind of goes like, I didn't hear any demos. I didn't hear anything. I just heard the finished product. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah. It's lightning in a bottle shit.
It does feel like magical thinking. It feels like, but I don't know, like, that's why I keep trying to bring it back to, like, this working class kind of idea where it's like, oh, yeah, we're just doing the thing.
Yeah.
We're doing our job. We're making a record.
Yeah.
Which, to me, makes it more meaningful than just being, like, this, like,
totally
mythical kind of
It's thing. Very, it's, like, super unpretentious.
Yeah.
And there's that, a lot of his lyrics have that thing, and a lot of the best lyricists have this, where it's, they don't sound like lyrics, that he's just sort of talking, but they're poetic in their own way.
I totally agree with it. And this is another thing that's kind of like this paradox where it's like they still had choruses. Mm. They still had catchiness to them. Like Pandora's Box.
Yeah.
That was always my favorite song of theirs, like Pandora's Box. Okay. And I think like getting really stuck into the album over the last couple of weeks, it's like maybe that's changed. But like when I first got introduced to it, I was like, fuck, this song is what the fuck is going on?
I think that was the last song. Like when I pulled up here, and by the way, I did one of the worst parking jobs this neighborhood's ever seen. It was.
You'd be surprised, Drew.
It was bad. But that was it was Pandora's Box was playing when I pressed stop on the old headphones.
And so we talked about how they never broke out of the underground. Oh, here's something that's very interesting in relation to that. So 1991, mm-hmm. Mush was released a month before Nevermind came out. 1 month.
Wow.
1 month before punk broke.
Yeah, fuck. Okay.
And they just skated under the radar.
That's, I like that context because you don't put that, like that sound doesn't seem like it should predate Nirvana.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
it
does.
Totally. Yeah.
That's very interesting.
It is like the tone of the record, maybe not the songwriting itself, but the tone of the record is like very grungy. It's very post grunge kind of like, yeah. I just love that because like Nevermind came out and all these like Atlantic is the big one. Atlantic Records in America. Mm-hmm. They just went on a spree, just signing every sort of vaguely punk rock, hardcore adjacent band just to see what would stick, see if they could get another Nirvana.
Mm-hmm.
And then Leatherface is just like, oh well, we'll just keep doing what we're doing, I guess. Living in this shit town in the north of England where all the factories are closing down.
And just like they're punching in on punching in to record the record, you know, here we go again.
Putting on their welder's mask, playing the guitar.
Punching out straight to the pub.
So funny.
That's very interesting that that came out at the same time. What year, you might know off the top of your head, I feel like it's 91 as well, did Smash the Offspring come out?
See, that was Epitaph. And we covered this. Let's find out. We covered this on
I want to say it's 91.
You want to say 91?
I think so. Maybe Offspring. 92.
Let's have a look. Studio album by The Offspring. 94.
Wow, okay.
94.
Same year as Ace Ventura, Pet Detective.
Wow, okay. Men of a certain age here on Dead Ramones today. Damn.
Okay, cool.
I'm surprised. I would have thought...
I thought that was earlier.
Yeah, based on everything that we just talked about, really, I would have thought it was earlier. But then again, like Self-Esteem was off that mm-hmm. record. Mm-hmm. And Come Out and Play was off that record.
Absolutely.
So 94 does...
This is my dad's favorite album of all time. As a kid, I was blasted nothing but The Offspring.
It is good, man.
I mean, it still holds up. I love
Self-Esteem. Self-Esteem is great. I really like that song. That was one of the songs that got me into like punk.
Like I said, like as a kid, this would just blast around my house.
Yeah.
And then I never had that thing where it's like some kids will be like rebel against their parents' music.
Yeah.
But when that was my parents' music, it was like, oh, this fucking rules.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It became my music. And yeah, that, I reckon through The Offspring, I got into like, yeah, punk music, and then getting having like friends with older brothers who like got me into like Blink and stuff.
Older brother music is so fun.
So good.
I didn't have an older brother.
I was the oldest too, but my best mate had a brother who was like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years older.
Yeah.
And he got us into Blink, got us into Nirvana, got us into the Bloodhound Gang. Hooray for boobies.
Oh my God. Yeah, I had a friend who had an older brother, but he was more into like metal.
Mm.
So he got us into like the metal stuff, well, new metal, like Roadrunner Records type stuff.
Yeah.
But I think Self-Esteem is so funny because obviously it was like the single, but like it got me into punk rock. But I think it also has a lot to do with like my internalized misogyny as well. That's the thing, is like, oh, this is great subculture, it's all this stuff. But some of the messages in some of the songs from the early 90s is like, you really gotta.
I mean, go
do some self auditing to get out of that mindset.
100%. Any sort of
even Deftones a little bit, man. Deftones are a little bit like emo, kind of like
when you
she ruined my life.
Yeah,
vibes.
Totally. Like, yeah. And then like early Blink songs are just the biggest like.
Oh, dude, early Blink.
It's like proto incel.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, absolutely.
The girl likes the jock and not me, so fuck everyone.
Yeah, and it's so against. It's interesting to like grow up with that, because even though Blink-182 became a mainstream band, I think like, you know, like Cheshire Cat and Dude Ranch, that was still pretty like, punk rock. It's weird how like those records and like emo records and stuff like that, some of the songs, they're like, oh, the woman has all the power and like don't get like henpecked or don't get, you know, that's kind of like. It's just this like low self-esteem.
Yeah, exactly.
Fucking man, it is incel shit, but it's so against the mainstream, which was like wage gap, fucking women are, you know, it's only been 20 years since women got the vote, or blah, blah, blah. Like it's just like it's interesting to grow up thinking like, oh, I'm gonna be taken advantage of by women. And like the world at large is like, fuck women. Like,
yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I think it really took some like yeah, like I said, just like self-auditing in my like early to mid-20s to be like, oh, I'm being a dick.
Yeah,
I need to turn this around a little bit.
You watch like the lyrics obviously don't hold up, and you sometimes like songs that you just like would rock out to as a kid, and then you listen to them in your 30s and you're like, that is horrific.
That's a little bit yucky.
And movies like, when I was a kid, I loved Revenge of the Nerds. Thought it was the funniest movie.
That's a brutal one.
And then you watch it, and it's so horrific.
He rapes someone.
Yeah, that's the climax of the movie. And she is like so enamored that this nerd was so good in the sack, when he literally like raped her by deception. And then that's the heroic moment where he takes the Darth Vader mask off. And she's like, oh my God, I should be with you. And it's like
Porky's was a bit like that.
It
as
is
well,
horrific.
Yeah.
Porky's is like that, but Porky's was more like voyeuristic.
Oh, peepholes.
Yeah.
Locker room, that sort of stuff. Yeah.
And Revenge of the Nerds as well had the bit where they like hooked video cameras up to the women's change room, and so they could watch them in the shower. And,
it's so fucked.
And it's presented as like the big win for the nerds. It's awful. It's so fucked.
It's so funny. Goddamn. I think songs definitely more so than movies like that. I think you can look at lyrics and look at songs as like a moment in time or just like an expression of like a very specific feeling.
Yeah, totally.
And so I don't really hold like I would still put on self-esteem, but yeah, this fucking rules. Yeah,
it rocks.
It's an expression of an incel. Like, yeah. It's an expression of, like, this kid who has no self. No
exactly.
Self. Fuck, like, the song's called Self-Esteem. I'm not making any profound points here. But, like, I'm just saying, like, I can still listen to that.
I think this song has something to do with self-esteem.
Yeah, no. Doing a pretty deep textual reading here. Really good critical analysis on this podcast. But do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I can still accept it for what
exactly.
It is. Whereas, like, a movie like that, I'm like, no, fuck. I'm not watching.
Yeah, it's
that shit.
It's okay. Tough to watch. I'm the same.
Well, I think to make comedy out of it is maybe the problem. Like, there's plenty yeah. of, like, psychological thrillers totally. Where there might be sexual assault and stuff like that.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, this is harrowing. And when it's meant to be harrowing.
It's,
like,
yeah, it's not played for laughs and yeah. played as, like, literally, like...
A triumph.
Yeah, like, go nerds.
Go nerds. Yeah. But I think now, like, it is almost like a... You can look at Revenge of the Nerds and be like, use it as a like a good example of incel culture though
yeah,
as well.
It's
so it holds 100%. Up in terms of like, this is what these young men have learned, and this isn't just a comedy, a fun little comedy movie. This is like the reality.
Yeah.
Of the mindset these days.
It's like a
perfect 4chan fucking.
It's an addicts. Artifact of history.
Yeah,
you can put it in context yeah. and be like, yeah, this is
yeah.
what it was like.
I don't think it's life imitating art either in terms of Revenge of the Nerds. I just think like these kids grow up and they are like maligned. It's like just that school shooter shit,
yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
It's like, yeah, I'm going to show them all mindset where it's like, no, grow up.
Yeah. Yeah. Grow
you,
the
you've
fuck
got a
up.
Voice. You've got two arms and two legs. Like go out and do something. Sorry.
Wild tangent.
I love the tangents. I'm just sort of I don't know what's wrong with me today. I'm struggling like to bring it back to get the flow, but we'll
at least you
anyway.
Can name names. Like I'm over here like
this fucking... is the problem. This is what happens when we do it before midday. It's
yeah,
just like
yeah.
Gotta wake up. Now this is another quote from James McMahon of The Guardian in the article kind of about Dickie Hammond, like in remembrance. And I just really like this because this is about Leatherface, but to me, this is what I love about hardcore music in general.
Mm-hmm.
So James McMahon, he wrote, "This is music that demanded a degree of effort or at least investment on the part of the listener. But then most of the best things do."
Mm-hmm.
What I love about this subculture is that there is a barrier to entry. And I know that sounds like I'm gatekeeping,
yep.
but your people's ears are gatekeeping.
Yeah, yeah.
Like so many people come on this podcast and they're like, every song sounds the same.
Yeah.
I'm like, I understand that. It's fine.
But if you really listen.
But if you really get into
if
it,
you
man,
really
like if you,
open your mind.
But Even for me, when I first got introduced, because everyone's like, oh, Leather, like this album, Mush. It's Mush. You got to listen to it. It changed everything, et cetera, et cetera. And even the first time I listened to it, I'm like, I don't really get it. Because
mm-hmm.
It's this hard thing where it is like, you kind of got to go backwards a little bit. And I'm like, I can hear the melody and the music, but like there's something about his voice that's not really like gelling, blah, blah, blah. And that's kind of like the more you dedicate yourself to it, the more you just sit with it. It's like, all right, it's just abstract. It's
yeah.
just like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
I guess that's the point of the quote, but all the best shit is like that, where you listen to it and you go, I remember like, just to get super mid to late 30s dad on you, the first time I heard Trouble Will Find Me, the national record.
Oh, yeah.
Being like, I liked one song on it and I was like, oh, man, I really enjoy that song. Let me listen to the album. Do not care for this album. And then I was like, you know what? I'll give that album a second chance. And I listened to it. And I was like, actually, I like that other song. And then at one point, every song on that was my favorite song.
The manifesto becomes apparent.
It just slowly grows on you.
Yeah,
and you're like,
yeah.
And then it's one of my favorite albums of all time.
Yeah. And I think you could say the same thing about like films as well. Like, I don't know, like Paul Thomas Anderson is probably a good one.
Great.
Where it's like a lot of people will be like, There Will Be Blood is boring.
Mm.
I'm like, yes. It's also the best movie.
It's
also just the best movie ever.
It's so good.
I'm not denying that it's boring.
Yeah.
And likewise with these hardcore records, I'm not denying that every song on Minor Threat Out of Step sounds the same.
Yeah.
But fuck, it's good.
Yeah.
It's like fucking good, man. But I think this, I mean, I guess we've already said it, but just like things that shouldn't make sense. Like what you're saying there about the incongruous kind of like poetic lyrics and then like the two different styles of playing and the guitars, everything just sort of comes together.
Yeah.
And it makes something new. And again, going back to movies, like maybe it's a bit like Quentin Tarantino, like in Kill Bill, where he's like this pastiche. Well, it's not a pastiche because it's meaningful and it's like heartfelt, but it's like these elements of things just like that wouldn't normally be like kung fu films, action movies. Hollywood, like mainstream Hollywood, like bring them all together.
And it becomes something new.
It becomes something new. Yeah, and it's like don't hide your influence. Like again, a lot of the riffs on this like could have been off a Bad Religion record. Or even Husker Du as well. Husker Du. However you fucking say it. But then like this is just undeniably like Leatherface. Like it isn't anything else other than this record.
Yeah, and it's like it fucking works. Like it's like I said to start us off, I listened to it and I was like furious that I hadn't heard it
before. Yeah.
So I would have like, where was 15-year-old me?
Yeah.
I would have absolutely eaten this up.
Yeah.
And I was surprised as well because like a few people I was talking to, like Jamie Kirk aforementioned, I was like, man, did you ever listen to like Leatherface? Like, yeah, of course. And I was like, how does it, is everyone just been keeping them a secret from me?
That surprises me that Jamie would have.
He like
known it.
I don't know if he knew it. We didn't get into like whether he was like a big fan or anything, but he's like, yeah, of course I know Leatherface.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, you guys have been hiding it from me.
Yeah. It's funny that all these like I said, like Hobo Music Avail, they all love this like random British band, this specific album. Hot Woman Music did a split record with them.
Oh, cool.
Released on No Idea Records in America.
Yeah.
But it's so funny that like your proteges have to give you a leg up
in
that market as well. But also like they're so unpretentious that they would have just been like, yeah, sick.
Yeah.
Sick.
Totally.
They were so intimidating when I met them.
Yeah.
In Melbourne, whatever that was. So they would have 10 years ago.
In their 40s or like
older. I reckon older, man. Yeah. Like, but also like they're living hard lives. Like lots of,
got that Northern English grime on them.
They're so gruff. They were so gruff. Like they're really gruff personality. But couldn't understand their fucking accents at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was also interesting because like my friend Stevie, he's Scottish. So they just had this kind of like dialect already, like this like inbuilt Northern UK kind of like, they're just related to each other, but just like, I was straight edge at the time still, and they were just drinking.
Yeah.
They were just drinking so hard. And I was like, I'm alienated from this. Sick. I can't get in this. And it was like very intimidating.
Yeah.
They just seemed, I remember them being, cause I'm a tall guy, but I remember them being so big.
Okay.
I feel like it's like thinking back to when I was a child, but it was only probably 10 like, years ago.
Even like, they're probably shorter than you, but just they seem so intimidating that they were just these huge dudes.
Yeah, like it's like literally their personalities, like and their cultural, like their cultural acumen, like what they meant to everyone around them was just like, I don't want to say fawning over them, but just like the level of respect was like was palpable. Like it was in the air. It was like, oh my god, Leatherface here.
Some gravitas about them,
but also like pretty funny dudes. Like they'd all obviously is like their first. I think maybe their first time in Australia, first and only time in Australia. Pretty sure, but they've gone and gotten like the cork hats and stuff. Cool. They're just walking around with like
cork hats and shit like that. That's so funny. Just like full tourist.
And also like because I was still in like my 20s and stuff. I'm like, oh, this isn't punk. This isn't like, why are they dressing funny? like I kind of like a bit of naivete on my part. I think, where it's just like,
that's so funny.
Now these are dudes who've been doing this since. So if it was 2013, like. Fuck, I can't do math. Like 25 years.
Yeah.
25 years.
Yeah.
And they're like, fuck it.
Yeah.
We're just musicians.
Yeah, we want cork hats.
Yeah.
We've earned these cork hats. Yeah.
I think the other thing about this record is it kind of proves like we're already in that mode in terms of like the timeline of hardcore and punk where it's like the bands are getting more thoughtful and they are getting more musically kind of sophisticated. But I think this record There's so many things that I think that this record is kind of like you can put it on a pedestal for. And I think another one of those is not just the lyrics, not just the themes, but also like the actual playing and the arrangement and the songs themselves. Like listen to a song called like other song like Trenchfoot.
Yeah.
And it's like so melodic, but the guitar, he's fucking shredding the whole time, but he's not playing leads. He's not soloing. It's just like the actual riff is like this weird legato fucking like,
It
could have been a metal. That could have been a metal. Yeah, right. That could have been
Well, that's like I said earlier, the best shit. When you're listening to it and you just isolate the guitar or you just isolate a bit of a sound, and you're like, there's so much going on in every song, but it's just a fun like punk song. Like I said, love it.
Yeah, yeah. Like the I think the technical, because like when I grew up as well, like I was in pop punk, blah blah blah, and then I got into hardcore, and I really like the technical kind of mathy like converge and stuff like that. Like stuff that was hard to play on guitar. Like you had to kind of be a virtuoso on guitar, and I would never associate this style of punk with that. Well, but this is like tech.
I agree.
Fucking guitar work on this. I couldn't play half of the songs. And
it's so like Northern English. It's just not pretentious. Like they're not being
it's wild.
They're not like, look what I can do.
They're exactly. A band like Converge, every record, it was kind of like, again, this unspoken thing where it's like, oh, what is the guitarist Kurt Blue going to do on this record? What is he going to fucking do on this? Like, how is he going to level up his playing?
Yep.
Whereas these are just the songs. This is just what came out.
Yeah.
There's no thought. There's no like calculated thought behind, I got to make this really complicated. It's just like, this sounds cool.
Yep.
This is how they played.
Yeah, I love it.
It's wild. What was your favorite song on it?
It was probably the title. It's something like, something about the, I think it's the fourth track. It's something, The Real World or something.
That's a good song. Like
in The Real World,
everything.
It's not the fourth track. It's like way down. Sorry. I think it's track 9.
Is that the one where it's like everything that's bad for you is, or everything that's good for you feels bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really good. I love Springtime. Springtime is the one that like gets me in my heart, but I think Trenchfoot is the one where I'm just like Trenchfoot and Dead in those two, one after the other. Yeah. I'm just like fuck, like, and then the lyrics in Baked Potato, it's all just so sad. Like how lonely, the one about like the soldier coming back from war.
I didn't get like into the lyrics enough to get that. There was
so
a lyric
much sadness in it. It's crazy.
There was a lyric that made me laugh. Where he just is like, David Icke is right. That, like the conspiracy guy who thinks that the Queen's a lizard and shit.
I love that. That's very good. That's very good. That's great.
It made me fucking, it made me laugh.
Awesome. Well, to the listeners, if you haven't listened to this record before listening to this podcast, go chuck it on. Like I said, I got deep into it. It was the only thing I wanted to listen to.
It's so good.
When I was originally planning to, I was supposed to record this in Brisbane with another comic who shall remain nameless, who cancelled on me. but I just got obsessed with it. It was the only thing I was listening to for a while. It's like it really suck you in. It's so good. And I'm glad I got to talk about it with you.
Yeah.
It was really fun. I'm glad you liked it.
Well, I'm glad that like you showed me, because I would have gone the rest of my life having never listened
it's
to this
great.
Album. And now I can fucking.
Yeah. I think I want to try and find it on vinyl. I think it'd be nice
to have.
It'd
be sick.
Yeah.
Do you ever go to Resist?
Yeah. Every now and then. They probably have it, right?
I reckon that would be your best bet.
Yeah. So, Drew Bensley.
Yes.
Community Notice Board.
Please listen. For the love of God.
Please, for the love of God.
I'm begging you.
Sign up to the Patreon. What's your Patreon? $5 a month?
$5 a month. And we do, it's fuck all. And we do two additional episodes a month that are kind of different.
A bit looser.
So some of them will literally be like stories that we'd collected for episodes that didn't make the cut because we went too long or they just didn't
quite
fit.
Your stories are great.
But we also have we're recording one today. That I've done the research for, which is one of the most insane stories you'll ever hear. I've been obsessed with it since I read this thing.
What's the locale?
Guatemala.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. That's random.
And so, we just get into, find interesting stuff and
it's
get
really
right
good.
Into it.
Like, when I came on to talk about, Southside, I was talking about Waterford, but we got into the suburban kind of lifestyle
that
I led in South Brisbane. You had some wild shit that you just brought up. It was so good.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I have to go back and listen.
You're literally reading off your phone, but it was like so engaging.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. I like to, that's like I said, that's my jam is finding shit. I've like, it's not a spreadsheet because I'm not that organized, but I have like this disparate like web of shit that somehow, like it's part of, some of it's in my inbox, some of it's in my notes app, and it's all just like, and I have to have like a suburb come up and then I'm like, I'm pretty sure I have a story about that. And I have to like go like,
to find
like,
it.
Like a conspiracy guy, you know, I got yeah, strings going from here to there. But I should probably put it on a yeah. spreadsheet.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah, I'll fucking, if you do listen to pods, which if it would be crazy if you were listening to this, you know, I don't listen to podcasts.
Nah, I hate, this is the last one.
Yeah.
This is the last podcast you ever listen to. Sorry, but guys.
Please, listener, I'm begging you, check it out. It's a lot of fun.
Yep.
And I think you're coming on next week.
Alex didn't give me a date, but
I'm pretty sure it's next week. Yeah.
That sounds great.
Cool.
Yeah, that sounds fine. I'm going to come on and talk about more specifically my time in the hardcore scene.
I can't wait.
Which is great because I've got a festival show coming up for Sydney.
Woo!
It's called 13 Jokes.
Nice.
After the Fugazi album.
Yeah, great.
and a big part of that is going to be talking about my time in
cool.
bands and stuff. Probably like half of the show will be about that.
Love
and
it.
And the other half of the show is just...
13 jokes.
Yeah. Yeah, follow me for that sort of shit on Ryan on Instagram, ryan.d.sim. Follow Dead Ramones on Instagram. Follow Rat Club Comedy. Come out to a show.
Yep, I'll be there. I'll be back, baby.
Yeah. Drew's getting back on stage. Do you want people to follow your personal account or is that just for family
no,
and friends?
No, that's just, just follow the pod.
Community Notice Board.
Yeah. I think, yeah.
Well, thanks so much, Drew. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks for listening, everybody.
Peace.